You're listening to SBS News.
Russian troops had been massed at the borders for weeks, yet many Ukrainians, including some of those in power, doubted their neighbour would launch a full-scale invasion. Then, in the early hours on the 24th of February, it began. A campaign of shock and awe, which the Kremlin assumed would see Russia take the capital and depose the government in a matter of days. But they underestimated both the skill of Ukraine's armed forces and the West's commitment to Kyiv, while overestimating their own capabilities. Marking Ukrainian Flag Day, President Volodymyr Zelensky, the former comedian-turned-wartime leader, pledged to take back the occupied territories.
The blue and yellow flag of Ukraine will again fly where it rightfully should be, in all temporarily occupied cities and villages of Ukraine. It will fly forever in Melitopol over Victory Square, where there cannot be the flag of those who lose the war. There will be blue and yellow in Kherson over Freedom Square. There cannot be the flag of those who do not know what freedom is. There will be blue and yellow.
Outside Kyiv, in the town of Bucha, Father Andrei is conducting a funeral service. The priest is tasked with organising formal burials for the hundreds of civilians found in mass graves. Russian soldiers retreated from the area months ago, but the atrocities carried out there will be remembered by Ukrainians for generations.
I think that neither I, nor anyone who lives in Ukraine, who witnessed the war, can understand what happened. For now, we are surviving on adrenaline. But after everything that's happened, I'm worried that the aftermath will last decades. It will be hard to get past this and turn the page.
Many Ukrainians who were able to leave in the early days of the invasion did so and have not returned. 6.5 million people, according to the most recent figures, mostly women and children. 34-year-old refugee Tatiana Afanasyeva and her two children remain in Poland.
I want to go home. I wish I could go home today. If only they would say, that's it, we're safe there, you can go back. If only I was told that we can safely return, I would leave on foot now. Well, because it's just impossible to explain in words. When we were on our way to Poland from Lviv, we spent 8 hours on the train, and we cried for all those 8 hours. I only barely recovered after the third day. My eyes were swollen because the separation with my husband was very hard, really hard.
In Russia, public support for the war remains high, yet the armed forces are struggling to recruit enough soldiers for the fight, and President Vladimir Putin is reluctant to call for a national draft. Samuel Green, a professor of Russian politics at London's King's College, explains why.
Most Russians continue to believe that this war will be over in a matter of a few months, while military planners, certainly in the West and probably in Russia as well, expect that this could drag on well into 2023, if not much beyond that. Right. So announcing a mobilization, announcing that this is a war for the long haul, right, is the kind of thing that might provoke a shift in public opinion, might provoke some people to think that, you know, this pain that they're facing now is not going to go away anytime soon, and thus, you know, give them an impetus to take out that frustration on Putin himself.
President Putin's decision to invade led to unprecedented sanctions and strengthened the NATO alliance he was determined to weaken. At a virtual conference, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and other world leaders renewed their commitments to support Kyiv for as long as necessary.
In the face of Putin's assault, we must continue to give our Ukrainian friends all the military, humanitarian, economic, and diplomatic support that they need. Until Russia ends this hideous war and withdraws its forces from the entirety of Ukraine.
But with winter approaching, President Putin has a new lever to pull as he tries to weaken Western support for Ukraine. It's the one which controls gas flows to Europe. Samuel Green again.
Well, he seems to be prepared to do it, and I think that he may feel at some point that he doesn't have much of a choice. But I think it would be foolish for Western governments to assume that he will, at the end of the day, buckle simply because they need the money from oil and gas exports.
A deep freeze could see some European leaders push for a peace deal. But Ukraine's lawmakers won't agree to any accord while Russia occupies a fifth of their country. Lesia Vasilenko is a Ukrainian MP.
So essentially having negotiations with a terrorist, with a tyrant, with a dictatorship, it will never yield the kind of long-lasting peace that we democratic countries and people living in democracies and free countries would like to see. And essentially, they want to see the building of a base for launching future hostile attacks against Ukraine to essentially dismember Ukraine and completely integrate it within Russia. Peace talks in this format are a no-go.
And so, 6 months into Vladimir Putin's planned three-day invasion, the conflict is seemingly headed towards a stalemate, where Russia makes only incremental gains and Ukraine hangs on, occasionally scoring victories behind enemy lines. There will be more fighting and more death, with no diplomatic solution in sight. Ben Lewis, SBS News.